The very first time that we communicated to friends that I had Alzheimer's was quite early on.
Alzheimer's disease affects about 6 million Americans and counting.
When we finished dinner, I passed Lois the check to figure out the tip in dividing it up, and I explained, I can't do this anymore because I have Alzheimer's disease.
It's a well-known disease, but there are a lot of misconceptions about it.
They were totally taken back because they had no idea and they didn't believe me. They thought I was joking. And because I was still able to converse pretty well.
So in this first episode of the Alzheimer's Disease Podcast, we're going to start with the basics.
Alzheimer's disease damages and ultimately destroys brain cells. Alzheimer's disease itself is not able to be stopped. What we can do are things to slow down the progression from a clinical functional standpoint.
And we'll explain the difference between Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia.
The dementia of Alzheimer's disease is just the tip of the iceberg.
We'll hear from experts, carers, and most importantly, people living with Alzheimer's.
None of us are given a perfect journey, and this is just part of our journey, and we're going to make the best of it.
And at the end of the show, we'll also share resources where you can learn more about this complex disease. I'm your host, Michaela Arneson. Thanks for joining us. The Alzheimer's Disease Podcast was created for educational purposes only. It's not a substitute for formal medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. So if you have questions about a medical condition, talk to your qualified healthcare provider.
The first thing I want to do is talk about dementia and Alzheimer's disease and the terms and how they relate to each other.
This is Dr. Philip Sloan, a professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
I have a lot of clinical background as well as having done research in care of persons with Alzheimer's disease and other cognitive problems.
For a long time, the terms dementia and Alzheimer's were used interchangeably. In fact, they still get confused for each other today. Let's break this down.
Dementia is a word that really describes loss of mental or cognitive function over time.
In other words, dementia isn't a disease. It just means that someone's thinking and memory has deteriorated to the point where it impacts their day-to-day activities. Dementia is caused by diseases, including Alzheimer's disease. And in fact, Alzheimer's is the most common cause, responsible for between 60 and 80% of dementia cases in the U.S.
There are other kinds of dementias as well. So in addition to Alzheimer's disease, there's vascular dementia, there's frontotemporal dementia, there's Lewy body dementia. Those are the kind of four main types of dementia.
And they can look similar, especially in later stages, like difficulty talking, remembering, or eating. But the way they impact the brain is different, and the treatments may be different too. It's also possible to have more than one type at once.
About 50% of people with Alzheimer's disease also have vascular dementia and vice versa, because the risk factors are the same, most likely. My name is Dan Gibbs. I'm a retired neurologist, and oddly enough, I have Alzheimer's disease.
Dr. Gibbs practiced for 25 years, so he's a great person to talk to about how our understanding of Alzheimer's has changed, and it's changed a lot.
All through my career, I saw a fair number of people with dementia, including those with Alzheimer's disease, and especially in the late 1980s and early 1990s, Alzheimer's disease was about the least favorite thing I dealt with, and that was bad on me. The reason for that was, at that time, we had absolutely nothing to offer to people with Alzheimer's disease.
Historically, an Alzheimer's diagnosis was met with a lot of fear, and for good reason.
There were no drugs, and by the time I was seeing them for the first time, they were usually in the advanced portions of the disease, and there really wasn't even any hope to offer them. So it was clearly a crummy disease for them and for me.
But in the last decade or so, we've had a couple huge revelations. First,
Alzheimer's disease is much more than dementia. The pathology in the brain,
or the changes in the brain,
start to occur in the brain up to 20 years before there's any cognitive impairment. And what we've thought of as Alzheimer's dementia is really just a very small part of the continuum of Alzheimer's disease that goes back 10 or 20 years before there are any symptoms at all.
And this has huge implications for treatment.
There are ways of slowing the progression of Alzheimer's, particularly if started very early in the disease. By the time you get to the stage of Alzheimer's dementia, the horses are already out of the barn, and it may be too late to do much about the disease, at least with what we have to work with today. There already is a huge amount of data that lifestyle modifications are effective if started early.
We'll talk more about these lifestyle changes and other therapies in coming episodes. But for now, takeaway number two is that Alzheimer's disease can now be diagnosed much earlier than at the dementia stage. And for some people, it can be managed well.
What I'm really trying to help shift the conversation in this direction is to learn how we can slow the progression of Alzheimer's pathology in the brain, and therefore slow the onset of Alzheimer's symptoms and push Alzheimer's dementia totally off the map so that we age in a healthy way and then we die naturally of something else, not Alzheimer's.
So how exactly does Alzheimer's disease affect the brain? Here's Dr. Jason Karlowish, director of the Penn Memory Center.
If a neuropathologist slices up the brain of someone who died with dementia, likely caused by Alzheimer's, what she'll see is plaques of amyloid and tangles of tau protein, and also missing neurons, just not there the way they should be.
Okay, so let's break this down, starting with neurons. Neurons are cells that look like tiny trees, and there are about 86 billion of them in the brain. They form a network that carries information throughout our entire body. So they're involved in literally everything we think, do, and feel. In Alzheimer's disease, neurons are destroyed by amyloid and tau.
Amyloid is a protein that is present throughout the body in various different forms. Amyloid just describes the shape of the protein. In persons with Alzheimer's disease, amyloid gathers together into these plaques and have some role in causing neurons to die. Tau is a protein that's found inside neurons. Normally, it functions to move transmitters along.
Neurotransmitters are little messengers that carry signals from neurons to other cells.
But in Alzheimer's disease, the tau protein turns into a tangle of useless protein, if you will.
So the messages don't get through.
Together, amyloid and tau have a role in causing neurons to die slowly over time and therefore people to slowly lose brain functions.
For a lot of people, the early signs of this damage are memory loss and trouble learning new things.
They were the sort of memory issues that you could easily dismiss as just being normal for getting older. I had moved to a new office and I never could learn the telephone number in my office. By 2012, I was having a little trouble with remembering names of colleagues.
This is because Alzheimer's disease tends to attack the hippocampus first, which is a part of the brain that's responsible for remembering events and facts. But another important revelation we've had about Alzheimer's disease is that it affects people differently.
There are three other forms of the disease. The disease can start in the part of the brain where visual images are organized.
That's at the back of your brain.
And that's called posterior cortical atrophy, or visual variant Alzheimer's. And those patients' earliest symptoms will be troubles with spatial arrangements. They're complaining constantly that their glasses are no good. They need new eyeglasses, despite multiple new prescriptions. Another presentation of the disease is the person knows what the thing is, but they just have a difficult time naming asparagus. So they'll call it, you know, the thingy, the green vegetable. You know what I'm talking about. And then a final presentation where the earliest problems are with organization and planning and multitasking.
In fact, in retrospect, Dr. Gibbs' very first symptom, years before he started forgetting things, actually had to do with smell.
My first symptom of Alzheimer's disease was probably back in 2006, when I first noticed that I was having a decrease in my ability to smell. Then about a year later, I started to have these weird, almost olfactory hallucinations called phantosmias, where just out of the blue, I would get the same stereotypical smell that was like baking bread mixed with perfume. It was very pleasant.
Takeaway number three. No two people with Alzheimer's are alike, and their disease progression won't look the same either. So let's talk about who gets Alzheimer's. You probably already know that for the most part, the disease is diagnosed in older people.
The older you are, the more likely you are to develop Alzheimer's disease. That oftentimes is called late-onset Alzheimer's disease.
Now, old is relative, but in the medical community, late-onset usually describes someone who's around 60 or 65 or older when they're diagnosed. Age is one of the biggest risk factors, but 5 to 6% of people start experiencing symptoms when they're younger. People like Paul.
My name is Paul Hornback, and I've been living with early onset Alzheimer's disease for really over 10 years now.
Paul was just 55 when he was diagnosed. He has a family history of the disease, which is another main risk factor.
My father had Alzheimer's, but he also had a lot of other health conditions, and he died when he was 80 years old. Also, on my father's side, my grandmother died from Alzheimer's, and then I have two uncles on my dad's side that also had Alzheimer's.
There is a genetic component to the disease, but if you have a family history, neurologist Dr. Andrew Budson doesn't want you to panic.
It's not like one's definitely going to get it if you have a family history. It increases your chances of developing the disease between twofold and fourfold. What that means is that if the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease at age 65 without a family history is about 3%, with a family history, that's between 6 and 12%. But that still means you have an 88% chance at that age of not developing the disease.
Dr. Gibbs learned he had a family history by chance. After he got a DNA test for a genealogy project his wife was working on, the test revealed he had two copies of a gene called APOE4.
I was totally flabbergasted and shocked because Alzheimer's disease wasn't on my radar screen. Both of my parents had died of cancer early on. APOE4 is quite common. Many people have an APOE4 gene, or at least one of them, and will never get Alzheimer's disease. If you have two copies, the risk goes way up. It is not a determinant.
There are a couple other genes or genetic mutations that almost certainly lead to Alzheimer's, but these are incredibly rare, like less than 1% of Alzheimer's cases.
I would not suggest getting tested genetically unless you're interested in being part of a study, unless you have a family history. And if you do get tested, I would recommend doing it under the supervision, if you will, of someone who can explain the test to you and what your risk is. Because a lot of people just freak out when they get their results back.
Dr. Budson says, interestingly, gender is another risk factor, although we're not quite sure why.
It turns out that women are about twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's disease as men. There's a lot of different theories that have been proposed. It seems to clearly not simply be that women live longer. It's more complicated than that. And I would say we're just at the beginning of engaging in research to try to understand this.
Research also shows that in the U.S., older African Americans and older Latinos are at a higher risk of developing Alzheimer's than older white Americans. But again, the picture is more complicated than the numbers suggest. Dr. Karlowish explains.
I think when we talk about race, we have to recognize, especially in America, race is surrounded by a host of other things that are captured under the label of race. If you grew up in regions of the United States where schools were segregated, and also the quality of the education in those schools was itself inequitable, you are going to have a lifetime set of different exposures that increase your risk of developing late life diseases like Alzheimer's. And we think some of that has to do with cognitive reserve that's developed early in life. So you can paint a story that the risk, if you will, associated with race is a story of race and its association of access from childhood on to equal opportunities and socioeconomic stability. Having said that, there is a story that surrounds some of the biologic aspects that cluster with race, namely genetics. And that's a story still being figured out and told.
Finally, head injuries and heart disease are also risk factors, along with depression, chronic loneliness, and a sedentary lifestyle, to varying degrees. All of the people we spoke to for this episode have written books about Alzheimer's disease and their experiences researching it or living it. You can find a list of those titles on our website, healthunmuted.com, along with links to other resources with more information about Alzheimer's disease and dementia, like the Alzheimer's Association, National Institutes of Health, and Mayo Clinic. In the next episode, we'll talk about how Alzheimer's disease is diagnosed.
I knew as I was taking the test that there was something wrong, definitely wrong.
The most exciting recent developments are the ability to measure those biomarkers in blood.
We'll talk more about symptoms and hear from people and their loved ones about how they coped with the shock of diagnosis.
I was devastated. I couldn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it.
No one's going to give you a regime that they can say that it's going to be perfect for every situation.
This is the Alzheimer's Disease Podcast. This show is part of the Health Unmuted audio library by Mission Based Media. To listen and learn more, visit healthunmuted.com and follow our show on your favorite podcast player. The Alzheimer's Disease Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by me, Michaela Arneson. Sound design is by Ivan Jurich. Our executive producer is Dan Kendall, and Chris Hemmings is our associate editor. Many thanks to Dr. Daniel Gibbs and Paul Hornback for sharing their personal experiences. And to Dr. Gibbs, Dr. Philip Sloan, Dr. Jason Karlowish, and Dr. Andrew Budson for sharing their medical expertise.